From KCRW in Santa Monica and KCRW.com, I'm Kim Masters, and this is The Business.
If you listen and learn, then you're going to be able to do anything you want next time.
Everybody thinks show business is really, really all white lights,
peaches and cream. What's with him?
Oh, I'm afraid he's gone Hollywood.
This week on The Business, Catherine Stockett and Tate Taylor were childhood friends. When they grew up, she wrote The Help, and he got to direct it. We hear the backstory from these two stubborn Southerners. But first, it's the Hollywood News Banter. Stick around, it's The Business from KCRW.
You can imagine Hollywood, everything is really driven by
making money.
What's with him?
Oh, I'm afraid he's gone to Hollywood.
I am joined by my banter buddy, John Horn of the Los Angeles Times. Hello, John.
Hello, Kim.
So, John, as you know, I have been dipping in and out of the Television Critics Association meet at the Beverly Hilton, which has been going on and is winding down. All the networks are appearing in order before the gathered critics and presenting their fall seasons.
A lot of fresh faces popping in. Ted Danson joining the cast of CSI, and there's a new actor on Two and a Half Men, isn't there?
Yes. A couple of the networks that have done their presentations already as we're taping have talked about big changes on their casts. NBC has James Spader coming into The Office with Steve Carell going out. As you say, Ted Danson coming in CSI, and the big one, Ashton Kutcher in Two and a Half Men. And Nina Tassler, who's head of CBS, addressed the critics, and she revealed that he will play an internet billionaire with a broken heart. And boy, the stakes are high. This was the number one sitcom on television. And the question is, can CBS keep it going?
At least for an episode. I mean, you have to imagine that first episode is going to be like the last episode of MASH, that everybody's going to tune in to see what they've done and where they're going to go and how they get rid of Charlie Sheen. But I don't know. Does this feel like something that could play more than a season?
I may regret this. I believe that it can work. And I believe that for a couple of reasons, one of which is Ashton Kutcher is an engaging guy. He has fans. He has, you know, those famous Twitter followers. Whether that translates into viewers for a TV show is obviously a question. But nobody has more incentive to make this work than Chuck Lorre, who is the producer of this show. He has been in this public battle with Charlie Sheen. And, you know, no one appeared. Normally, people come from the shows and they make a panel and they talk to the critics. None of these guys came even by satellite to present to the critics. Nina Tassler of CBS was asked about this and said they're in production, and the entire room started laughing because everybody's in production. And she sort of said, well, you know, they can't have their focus broken. And she did allow that at the first meeting of this new cast, the atmosphere was very fraught. And so they are keeping everything under wraps. And I can tell you the focus laser-like on making this show work.
And obviously, a lot of people have agendas, and they'd love to, I think Chuck Lorre would love to show Charlie Sheen that he doesn't need him and that the show can be a success without him.
In another TCA development, Sir Paul McCartney was beamed in via satellite to speak to the critics about a Showtime special that he will be part of. But the more newsmaking part of that came when he said that he apparently was a hacking victim and is going to have to answer questions about this when he goes back to London in this scandal that you and I have talked about at some length.
In some way, it indirectly implicates Piers Morgan, who has replaced Larry King on CNN, who wrote a column 5 years ago in the Daily Mirror where Piers Morgan boasted about hearing Paul McCartney on Heather Mills, his ex-wife's phone, and said, this is Piers Morgan saying, the former Beatle sounded, quote, lonely, miserable, and desperate, unquote.
Yes, the part that killed me actually was when he said that Paul McCartney had actually sung We Can Work It Out to her on that phone call, which is something I don't even want to think about happening. It makes me sad. But the point is, Heather Mills had said on television that a journalist from a different group in the Murdoch-owned newspapers, not the News of the World group that had made all the news so far, but another group of newspapers, because he owns many, had told her that her phone had been hacked. And Piers Morgan, having been the editor of one of these papers in that group, it would appear that he certainly seemed to know about these hacked phone calls. He issued a statement and said that Heather Mills essentially is not an honest person and that she's leaked things before, but he didn't answer kind of an important question, John.
Yeah, which is whether or not he actually listened to the voicemails or what did he know and when did he know it?
Yes, how did he know about Paul McCartney's phone call and sad voice?
Exactly. And this is where the scandal that has enveloped News Corp is really spreading in the States. Obviously, Piers Morgan is a British journalist, but this affects a U.S. company and a prominent U.S. news show.
Yes, CNN has got a problem on its hands, and I don't know. Apparently now there are calls in Britain for Piers Morgan as we speak, as we are recording, for him to come back and answer questions about this, and it creates a big problem for CNN.
Well, at least maybe Jerry Lewis could come in and guest host.
Yes, poor Jerry Lewis. The muscular dystrophy telethon is finally going ahead without him. He's 85 years old. No, this has not really been explained.
Well, it's been explained, I guess, behind the scenes. I mean, there are some comedians who say that even though they revere Jerry Lewis, he wasn't quite as sharp as he had been. He was missing some of his cues. But, I mean, this is kind of like, you know, Julia Child in a kitchen. I mean, it's kind of inseparable that Jerry Lewis, outside of MDA, the telethon that he's hosted. But I will say that even though it's raised a fortune of money, the revenues from this 24-hour telethon have been declining. The most recent year in 2009 was $45.5 million, where it had been, you know, in the mid-50s a couple of years earlier. And I don't know who they're going to get to replace it, but I think the feeling is Jerry Lewis thought he could go out with one last show this year over Labor Day weekend, and he won't get that chance.
So nobody gets to be king of comedy forever. Thank you, John.
Thank you, Kim.
John Horn of the Los Angeles Times. If you have even the smallest interest in contemporary novels, you've undoubtedly heard of and possibly even read The Help, the best-selling novel by one of our guests today, Catherine Stockett. The book, set in Jackson, Mississippi in the 60s, tells tales of race relations from the perspective of African-American maids minding the children and cleaning the homes of white families. The film version opens on Wednesday, strategically timed so that book clubs, which often meet Wednesday nights, can plan an outing to the movies. The film was directed by Stockett's childhood friend, Tate Taylor, who also joins us today. The movie stars Viola Davis and Octavia Spencer as maids and Emma Stone as the young white writer who encourages them to tell their stories.
I'd like to do a book of interviews about working for white families. And we could show what it's like to work for, say, Elizabeth.
You know what Miss Leaf would do to me if she knew I was telling stories on her?
Well, I was thinking that we wouldn't have to tell her. The other maids would have to keep it a secret, too.
All the maids.
Stockett is a native of Jackson, Mississippi, but she was living in New York City, trying to make it in the magazine world, when the September 11th attacks occurred. That tragedy made her nostalgic for home and comfort. She was longing to hear the voice of Dimitri, an African-American woman who had taken care of the Stockett family for decades. And that inspired Stockett to start writing a story in Dimitri's voice. Dimitri became Abilene, a central character in The Help, played in the film by Viola Davis. 5 years later, Stockett had a finished manuscript, but she racked up 60 rejection letters in her quest to find an agent. Meanwhile, Taylor was an unproven filmmaker in Hollywood, eking out a few dollars, taking minor acting roles. When Stockett let him read the manuscript of The Help, he persuaded her to sell him the movie rights. In the end, of course, Stockett got her agent, and she was finally closing in on a book deal with Amy Einhorn, who ran an imprint at Penguin Books, and that's where we'll begin.
Well, there was this day where Amy Einhorn called me, and she had, like, the president of Penguin on the phone and the head of publicity, and it was this big conference call, and I couldn't figure out what they wanted. They said, "We have to ask you something. There's a change we want to make." And I thought, oh, Lord, here it comes. "We want to change the title. Instead of calling it Help, we want to call it The Help." And so, you know, I gave him a nice long pause, acting like I was thinking about it. Mm-hmm. But I'm over in the corner laughing, chuckling, because I'm thinking to myself, do you know how many rejections I've gotten? I couldn't give a rat's ass what they called that thing. They could have called it the big white toilet on the front yard.
Matt, if you remember, I go, "Do not let them change the title of your book." Like, you're like, "Tate, I don't care."
All right, I won't care. Excited. the hell?
And then we had, Catherine and I had some tough conversations too, because I wanted the rights, and her friends and family and husband.
And agents.
I will be the first to admit, rightly advised her she was nuts to let me do this.
Catherine, I assume they were telling you that he could possibly hamper you if there was serious Hollywood interest in a movie.
They just kept telling me to look at the facts, because at that time, Tate didn't look so good on paper. You know, they're like, look, what has he done that has, you know, drawn any type of popularity or attention? You know, and he had made two films that I absolutely adore, a short film and a full length. And, you know, I didn't have the right answer for him, but I just had this feeling that the film needed to be made by another Mississippian who understood that environment and how tricky the subject of race is, especially in Mississippi, and especially because we are both white.
Right. We could have a whole separate conversation about the race and the white and the black of it all, but the show is called The Business, so we're going to have some discipline here. We're going to be disciplined. So you are talking her into it in spite of everyone. And are you guys writing up a contract? Are you writing a letter? Did you, like, you know, stick a pin in your fingers and rub them together and swear that you were brother and sister?
No, Brunson Green, my producer, and another producer, and my business manager, John Norris, and I, we just kind of put together. We started
I went back and looked at that contract not long ago. It is the funniest looking thing. It's one page. It's not even on letterhead.
We didn't afford letterhead.
And every once in a while you'd throw in a big, like, heretofore. And it basically said, you know, Tate's going to make this movie and I'm going to let him.
But what I convinced her is and Catherine finally realized, I said, we may not be able to pay you a big payday in the beginning, but we can pre-negotiate what you will make if the movie's made. And then her agent was like, yeah, they're right. Dead gummit. He got me. So,
okay. So she mentioned that she had seen two films, a short film, which I'm not sure which one it is. Chicken Party.
It is hysterical. It has Octavia Spencer. It has Allison Janney. It has Melissa McCarthy. I mean, who's huge now. It's incredible.
And Pretty Ugly People, which is a 2008 feature.
Yeah.
I mean, that is kind of nuts for her to give this to you, right? Because you had done a limited amount of directing. But
all right, you want to know the real story here?
Yes, hit me.
Okay, here's what happened. Tate asked and asked and begged and pushed, and I said, no, it's just not the right time. And then he went just dead silent. And his version is that that's how he got me, because he...
I got scared
he was going to go away.
Right.
But the truth is, he let me sit and think about it, and then he called me about 2 weeks later, and there was this other filmmaker, who I cannot mention, who was trying to get the rights. And Tate did his homework and found out how many books this filmmaker had optioned and were sitting on the shelf dead.
Ooh.
And he called me and said, if you give this person the rights,
right,
chances are it's going to sit on that shelf and never get made. And that is really what woke me up, because that's when things started clicking in my head. I didn't want this thing to sit on a shelf, but then I also didn't want some Hollywood type or, you know, forgive me, I love Canada, but somebody that was going to go film it in Vancouver.
Was that literally being discussed, or are you just making that part up?
You know, it's just out there. I don't know much about the movie business, but I have seen some pretty bad ones. And I know that if this film had not been shot by a Mississippian and in Mississippi, it would not be the piece of art that it is.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Catherine Stockett, author of the bestseller, The Help, and her childhood friend, Tate Taylor. Though he'd never made a studio film, had directed only one very small feature-length movie, thanks to Stockett, he got to write and direct The Help, which opens later this week. Taylor had pressured Stockett to give him the movie rights to the book when it was still an unpublished manuscript. Against the advice of everyone in her life, she did.
You know, we act like this all happened very fast, but the truth is that there were several months that went by as we tried to negotiate this deal. And when Tate first approached me, he says that they didn't have much money to offer. He had no money. He didn't even say, let's put a dollar down on the table.
Uh-huh.
But then once it was all said and done, he did take a monetary risk, not a lot, but just a little, so that I knew And it helped me understand how serious he was.
A monetary risk as in promising money to you or giving money to you?
Well, he paid for the option, as he should.
And having, I mean, I don't know how you got that money, Tate.
How did you get that money?
Through other friends, honestly. I mean, I don't want to sound corny, but it's true. We have an amazing group of friends from, you know, Alice and Janney and Octavia Spencer and Brunson Green and John Norris. And we've all been in the trenches together forever. I mean, I went so broke writing this screenplay. Allison had to loan me like 10 grand just to pay my bills. It was horrible. And then when DreamWorks came aboard and I was paid back, I'll never forget, I took her a shoebox with $10,000 in cash and gave it to her. She goes, nobody has ever paid me back. I can't believe this. And so her assistant came in the room and she laid on the floor and we dumped the money on her body. We have a picture.
Rolled around.
I would love
really,
to see that.
I had to pay about 15 people back after the deal went through with DreamWorks. It felt so good. I hate asking anybody for anything or borrowing money. But people were coming up to me going, what can I do? This has to happen. We love the book. This, you know, and they wanted to protect it. They love that, you know, we wanted Octavia to be Minnie. And this is before DreamWorks. So we just kind of all put ourselves in a cocoon of support.
And we thought it was going to be an independent film.
Really? I did.
And you put a year of your life on hold, Tate.
I did.
To write the screenplay.
And you scraped together the money for the option. How were you going to scrape together the money to make the movie?
One thing I'm a professional at is being stubborn. I mean, I'll bet the farm. If this had gone another direction, I would have a burrito stand in Mississippi.
Okay, so now you come. The book comes out, and some people kind of like it. It's riding along number one at the bestseller list. Do you start thinking, oh, my God, I took all this chance, and I'm going to be one of those guys that gets sort of kicked to the curb by the big players in the industry?
Well, actually, I never worried about that because there was one little fact that remained true. I had the rights, period. And as you know, that comes a lot of power and decision-making ability.
You knew by then that if they ran out of time on the option, if we did, mm-hmm. that I would just grant it to you again.
Oh, yeah. Kathy, because then she stuck in her heels, too. Then she went from, are you crazy, to, oh, yeah, let's we got to do this. She was on the same stubborn bandwagon I was on. But that fear never really crept in. I mean, there were some days when Brunson and John and I would get phone calls from people that we had been dying to talk to for the last 15 years, and they would say, oh, so are you Tate Taylor? Yeah. And you, what are your intentions? Well, I've written the script and I'm directing it. And then we would have to say, well, if you're not interested in me writing and directing it, there's really no need to call back. We would hang up the phone and go, oh my gosh, I can't believe it. We just did that. So then after a while, you look so crazy, you can't go back. You just have to be that guy.
I mean, they had to take a double risk in signing you up to be the writer and the director.
Yeah.
I have to say, my mind can't quite take in that idea because they're very, very good at getting rid of people. You must be awfully, awfully stubborn.
But talented. He had this fantastic script already written. But, of course, you didn't have the directing credentials like they wanted you to have.
And I may not get it. But I'll tell you a funny story about when we kind of all looked at each other and thought, oh, wow, what's happening? Brunson Green and Catherine and I were driving from Jackson, Mississippi to Atlanta. And we had just passed, we were near Tuscaloosa, and a tornado had just crossed the highway. And there was like hail and cars overturned, and it was really eerie. And the phone rang, and Amy Ironhorn called Catherine and said, your book
made it on the New York Times list.
Bestseller list.
Like the real list. It was asterisked at number 11, which means you slipped in under the door.
And we all stared at each other, and we just, you could tell our faces were thinking, this isn't going to be an independent film anymore. And and we pulled over to a truck stop and got three wine coolers and celebrated on the trunk of the car.
Coming up after a short break, how Tate Taylor used his little niece to land filmmaker Chris Columbus as a crucial ally in the making of The Help. You're listening to The Business from KCRW and KCRW.com. This is The Business, and I'm Kim Masters. We're talking with childhood friends Catherine Stockett and Tate Taylor. Stockett wrote the best-selling novel The Help, and Taylor talked her into selling him the rights when the book was still an unpublished manuscript. That proved to be a big break when DreamWorks decided to make a movie based on the book, which looks at race relations in the 60s through the eyes of African-American maids in Jackson, Mississippi. Taylor was an unlikely candidate to write and direct this project. He'd made a short film called Chicken Party and one very small feature, Pretty Ugly People, which he got done thanks to friends, credit cards, and borrowed cash. Once The Help became a bestseller, Taylor knew he had a huge opportunity. So he reached out to filmmaker Chris Columbus for help. Columbus's credits include small movies like Home Alone and the first two Harry Potter films. I asked Taylor how he happened to get Columbus's ear.
Well, he'd been a fan of my work. Yeah, he saw Chicken Party in 2004. Yeah. It's really funny. I was like, what can I do? What can I do? And my sister in San Francisco had casually mentioned that her daughter was best friends with Chris Columbus's daughter. And I was like, And Chris's daughter was having a spend the night party. And I, let's just say I got my...
You got his kid to take him.
I got my niece. I pimped out my niece to take my CD to Chris Columbus's house and give it to Chris. My little niece gave it to him, and Chris tells the story. He was like, "Oh God, I'm gonna have to watch this thing because I know his sister Sharon, and I'm gonna see her at some bake sale for the school, and she's gonna ask me if I watched it." And he watched it, and he loved it. And then he brought me up there, and he met, and we've been trying to find something we could do together. And he liked Pretty Ugly People, but what I do is ensemble, quirky material, and you know he's a big filmmaker, obviously. So there was never a fit. And then I brought him The Help. I brought him two manuscripts to the galley, and I knew that this filmmaker in San Francisco was going to see this purple and yellow cover with The Help on it. He maybe wouldn't read it right away, so I gave him one for his wife, too. And 2 weeks later, he said, "My wife is about to kill me to call you and say that this is the greatest book ever."
Oh,
so that was the angle with Chris. And then even then, we couldn't get anybody to take us seriously. And I get it. I mean, we would be at these meetings, and even with Chris, they didn't want to work with me. And I understand it. And Chris was like, "No, he's directing it, period." And Stacy Snyder, Steven Spielberg, I mean, they changed my life. Stacy, she read it. She loved it. She brought me in. And I met with Steven, and Stacy had read it, you know, the screenplay about 6 months prior. And again, she's running a studio. She's just wisely on paper was like, "I can't do this." And then she said, "You know what? I can't let this go. I can't get this movie out of my head." And I talked to Steven, and we want to do it. And that was it.
What she has told me is that you actually did direct the movie, because I had to ask like what went on there, and says that she's given people shots before. The common denominator, she says, in all of these examples is that they all wrote their own scripts, and Tate wrote his too. He deserves all the credit I think he is about to get.
Well, I got to give her and Steven credit, because you know when they had to push that button that transferred all that money to Mississippi, they probably took a shot of tequila and said, "Oh my God, what are we doing?"
Are you allowed to say what the budget is?
I get yelled at every time I talk about that.
It's not the kind of movie that Hollywood has been jumping all over, right? What would have to be considered a mid-level budget.
Yeah, no, they just really don't make these movies much anymore.
Well, and you know, I mean, did you meet with other studios besides DreamWorks and have actual, you know, did they come and try to woo you, or was DreamWorks really the one that saw this?
To the level in which it took, yes, DreamWorks was the only one. We couldn't get any love out there because of me. We just couldn't. And Michael Barnathan and Chris Columbus would, you know, I think they didn't want me to get my spirits down. I think they were trying to keep theirs alive, too, because
right.
We have this hit book, and people just, you know, it's just, you know, it's a female cast. It's period. It's Tate. It's,
I'm sure, you know, African-Americans, too, had some. I mean, is that something to do with it as well?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. You know, and we wanted Octavia Spencer to be Minnie, and no one knew who she was. And, you know, and I'd written the part of Charlotte Phelan to be Allison Janney. I mean, this was our group. And I think there were so many components that we just didn't want to waver on. It just increasingly became more and more easy to say no.
Catherine, did you feel at any time like saying, so Tate, you know, I know we said we'd do this, but honestly, I want to see the movie of my book? Or were you with their all?
Mm-mm.
No, you never
Mm-mm.
wavered.
You can ask anybody. I am a tire kicker. It does take me a long time. But once I make up my mind to do something, God help the person that gets in my way. So, no, I was on board. And if it was going to have to be a $1.5 million independent, then so be it.
Now, Tate, did you say to her, like, I am thinking Allison should be the mom? And did Catherine, did you say, well, I do not visualize her that way?
No, but the good thing about Catherine, and she'll be the first to admit this, I think the last movie she saw in a theater was Seabiscuit. When I tell you she doesn't give a rat's ass about movies, I get mad at her when I talk about people. She's like, I don't know who that is. I go, how can you not know who this actress is? Like, I don't know.
But look, yeah, I had two things in my head that I really wanted. I wanted Octavia to be Minnie, and I wanted it to be filmed in Mississippi. And Octavia lived with Tate, so I figured I had a pretty good chance of getting that one.
Then I put Octavia in anything I've ever done. I mean, I would film her reading the phone book, and I thought she could sell tickets.
Right, right.
And we're both from Mississippi.
And Chris Columbus, was he, like, backstopping? Because he's, you know, he's obviously a pretty seasoned director. Was he, like, yeah, let me give you some advice, son.
He was so appropriate and supportive. And what he was really the most helpful was when he was, okay, now we're entering the world of studios and this is going to happen and this might feel like this, but this is what this really
means. What was
going
to happen?
I'm not going there.
now we're getting there.
Because none of it did.
I mean, it is a complicated story with lots of characters and their stories, and they have to be woven. Again, I'm still like, really? How did you do that?
I've always loved ensemble. I love Robert Altman. I just love it. I mean, my first short film, Chicken Party, there was about six storylines in a 30-minute short. And then Pretty Ugly People, I just kept wanting to explore that. I just love it. I love trying to keep up with the movie.
So are you getting calls about other stuff now? Is it already happening?
I still don't make sense on paper. I'm sure now it's just considered a fluke. Not yet.
Not yet. Did you guys?
No, yes. My phone, I don't think I'm going to be taking $10,000 in cash back to Allison's house again. I'm feeling a little safe. But the movie's not out yet. So
that's,
you know,
true. It's,
people have to see it.
It's going to be very interesting. I mean, you're opening it on a Wednesday. They are opening it on a Wednesday, which is kind of an unusual thing.
That's National Book Club Night in America.
Hopefully, book clubs out there get a bucket of fried chicken and go to the parking lot early and have some fried chicken.
Tailgate.
And go see it.
I mean, I hear it over and over again. Readers coming up to me, oh, my whole book club. The last time I heard it, I was at the gynecologist on the table getting a pap smear, and Dr. Holly Sternberg and her assistants were in there, and they said, we're all going. I'm like, you know, this is not really the time to be talking
speculum
about.
Oh, are you kidding me? She probably signed a book in the stirrups. She's a dummy.
Really, congratulations to both of you. It's just a great
Thank you.
Story.
And I must say, you on press tour.
This was the one interview Tate called me and goes, Kat, you've got to do this with me, please.
I've been listening to the show, feeling like this broke loser in L.A. going, oh,
one day.
How are they on that? Oh, that movie. Oh.
One day, Tate was like, one day I want to be on that show.
Oh, you're
Catherine
making
goes,
that
now
up.
What are we doing?
I am not. We actually had it lined up from when we were in L.A., and we had to change the schedule. And
I know.
And Catherine's like, we
devastated.
Have to do this. I go, you're doing the
And that's The Business. Darby Maloney produced and edited today's program with production assistance from Ray Guarna. To leave a comment about today's show, go to our Facebook page, KCRW's The Business, or post on our website, kcrw.com/thebusiness, where you can stream or podcast the show. You can also listen to us on demand on your iPhone, Android, or BlackBerry with our KCRW apps. And you can always subscribe to the podcast through iTunes. The Business is produced and distributed by KCRW Santa Monica. I'm Kim Masters. We'll see you next week on The Business.